said about the university class, about the type of people that come to university. And he mentioned four different types of people that come. I can only remember three, but he mentioned that the people come because some people really want to be ambitious and learn to do something. And another reason why people come is because their parents' money is there, so we might as well go and have a good time. And another group of people that come is people that are actually looking for knowledge. And from these four groups, he said that that group was the most cheated. So we're looking forward to hear what real knowledge would entail. So thank you very much for coming. Afterwards, there's a chance for questions. The bot will be going around, but you can also ask out loud anything that you'd like to do.
Thank you all very much for coming. Thank you all. The Bhakti Yoga means to understand our natural identity from the words of Krishna as spoken in Bhagavad Gita. There the first understanding is to see that there's a difference between that which is changing and that which is not changing. The body is always changing. We have a childhood body, a young body, we get an old body. The body is always changing. But the self within the body stays the same. The content of our thought may change, but the fact that I'm perceiving, there's someone there who's perceiving all these changes of body, or all these changes of thought. That persistent consciousness, that's my actual self. That's the actual self, the self within. At the present moment, I'm identifying with the external self. And so I say that I'm American, or I'm South African, or I'm white, or I'm black, or I'm old, or I'm young, or I'm thin, or I'm fat, short, or I'm tall, or I'm this, or I'm that. But that's not my actual, that's my dress. Today I'm wearing one dress, tomorrow I can wear a different dress. That changes. But the person within the dress stays the same person. The inner self means that conscious living being. But that conscious living being won't be happy by any amount of material adjustment. That's why, thank you for remembering that. I said that the students who come to the university looking for knowledge are those who are cheated the most. Because the university, as far as we usually see, doesn't give even the basic knowledge. Technological knowledge and so many departments, oceanography and botany and physics and English literature and blah, 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 sociology. But understanding the difference between the body and the person within the body. Any department here for that? Anyone enrolled in that course? That's out of the picture. And that's the most important thing. All big, huge ups and downs and upheavals in South Africa and other African countries, all based on the bodily conception of life. All based on the misunderstanding that the body and the person are the same. Which is item of ignorance number one. That's bewilderment number one. And that is simply not addressed. Or it's addressed by saying, well, everybody is created equal, which is not a fact. Some people are created powerful, strong physically. Some people are created weak physically. Some people are brilliant, some people are slow. physically, externally, everybody's different. We're not, Albert Einstein and the street sweeper are not the same. And Muhammad Ali and me are not the same. Big difference. So equality in terms of trying to make these the bodies all equal is ignorance number two. The real thing is to see the spiritual equality. On the spiritual platform, all human beings are equal. Human beings are equal to the trees. Trees are equal to the plants. Plants are equal to the birds. There's no living being that's, yes, all equal rights for the human beings and for the animals. We stomp on them. We slit their throats. We send them to death camps. No, animals also. They're living beings. You have a family, they have a family. You want to live, they want to live. You have feelings, they have feelings. Why then this discrimination that we can torture them, but we have to be nice to all the human beings? They're living in a different body, but they're living beings, actually the same as you and me. Today I have a human body, next time I may have an animal body. It's simply like dress. Not that because I have an expensive dress today, tomorrow I can't have rags. I can go up, I can get a more expensive dress, or, you know, fortune takes me the other way, I'll be walking around in hand-me-down rags. So now we have this human body, we can go up, we can go down, according to how we use this lifetime. If we use this lifetime for spiritual realization, we can be elevated to the point of getting free from the cycle of birth and death. Or if we misuse it, we can be degraded down to the lower species where we can't even ask, why am I suffering? Why am I here? Who am I? What is the purpose of my life? The animals don't ask these questions. They don't have the equipment. They don't have the equipment. But we're equipped in the human form. And so if we just use the human form for what the animals do, for eating, for sleeping, for mating, for fighting, that's animal life. And that we refine the process of animal life is no great credit. I mean, the animals are sleeping in the street and we're sleeping on a waterbed. But sleeping is sleeping. Yeah, come on in. Maybe some want to move up a little bit. People are watch this. Yeah, okay. Thank you for that. Much appreciated. Yeah, cell phone's off. You know, eating is eating. Someone eats, we eat in a restaurant, and the animal eats in a cave. Sometimes people make restaurants like caves. They even call it the cave. And then, what do? They eat there, and the animal eats in its own cave. Eating is eating. Sleeping is sleeping, sex is sex. A human being enjoys sex. Mosquitoes are, they love it too. It's the same thing. A human being thinks the pleasure of sex is something unique. Every bug knows how to do it. And gets the same pleasure. And fighting. We're fighting with bombs and the animals are fighting with claws and teeth, but fighting is fighting. We're not advanced because we're fighting with nuclear weapons or some other fancy technology. It's the same animal life, just refined. So human life is not meant to be a refined version of animal life. That's not our business. Our real business is spiritual realization. that spiritual regionalization of Krishna's teaching in Bhagavad Gita. How many have read Bhagavad Gita? Yeah, one. Okay. You have copies available here? Okay, so yeah. That's something really worth getting into when you can. Even if you read a page a day, Bhagavad Gita, how you get something very, very valuable. This Bhagavad Gita as it is, it's presented with the Sanskrit, with the English, with the explanation preachers. If you go through just a page or so every day, by the time you graduate, you'll all be sages. And this chanting Hare Krishna makes everything practical. The theory is great, philosophy is great. Come on in. Have to move up a little bit again here. Give them a chance. Yeah, fill it up. Come on. Philosophy is theoretical, but the chanting brings us directly to the spiritual platform, so it becomes realized knowledge, experienced knowledge. We can talk about it, but then it's like talking about honey. Talking is one thing, we can analyze it, understand it. When you taste it, you know what it is. This chanting brings us to the spiritual platform. We can taste actually what the inner self is. We can experience our inner self by direct perception, prajakshavagamam, paramyam. One directly experiences who we are by a simple method of chanting. And susukam. Susukam kratamanyam. It's very joyful. Susukam. Sukam means happy. And susukam, very happy. I can say more, but maybe I'll see what kind of questions you have. You can direct me if you're talking about. There's a question in the back.
There's a clipboard.
See, no, there's a clipboard. Okay.
The topic for today was understanding of inner self.
Yeah.
Okay.
How do I stay true to myself always? And how do I stay spiritually grounded? Good. Well, true to ourselves, first of all, we have to know who the self is. If I'm true to my African self, or true to my American self, or true to my white self, or black self, or young self, or old self, then I'm being true to what I'm not. Because I'm not this body. I'm not this body. Hmm? Or today I'm, even if I think I'm this body, today I'm one body, tomorrow I'm another. Today I'm young, tomorrow I'm old. This life I'm white, next life I'm black. This life I'm African, next life I'm American. Huh? So if I'm being true to this body, whatever the body is, that's what I stand for. Then I'm being untrue to myself. But to be true to myself, first I have to know what my inner self is, not the outer self. Then the next thing is, all right, I'm an inner self, I'm consciousness, I'm spirit. Great. what do I do as spirit? Like if I'm American, I know what I do. I vote, I serve in the army, I cause trouble all over the world, I do all that stuff. But if I'm spirit, what am I supposed to do? Do I just sit here all day saying, I'm spirit, I'm spirit, I'm so happy that I'm spirit? What's the engagement? Like if you're a student, you know what you do. You study, you take exams, you do all the stuff that student is supposed to do. Well, what's the occupation, the engagement, the role of the soul? What is he supposed to do? Well, that, we have to go further into the nature of the inner self and see that that inner self is part of a larger self, the super self. That's Krishna, or God. I'm spirit, but I'm not the totality of spirit. I'm not the ultimate spirit, the supreme spirit, the be-all and end-all spirit. That I can't say. This body is material, is matter, and it's working under the direction of spirit. As a spiritual being, I'm directing the activities of the body. But I can't say that I'm directing the activities of the universe. The universal body is not, it's working because of me. It's working because of a higher consciousness, supreme consciousness, and that's Krishna. So we're part of Krishna, therefore we have a relationship with Krishna. So you're part of Africa, so you have a relationship with South Africa. Or you're part of your family, so you have a relationship with your family. You're part of something bigger. Every one of us is part of something bigger, part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So our material activity is one thing, but our spiritual activity consists of acting in relationship to Krishna. What is that, that acting in relationship? It means service. If I'm part of the country, I serve the country. If I'm part of the family, I serve the family. I'm part of Krishna, I serve Krishna. But the relationship is reciprocal also. Krishna, the whole, serves the parts also. Where the parts love the whole loves the parts also. There are, just as there are loving dealings in the material world, there are loving dealings on the spiritual platform also. So those dealings of love are the eternal activities of the spiritual living being. And those activities simply have to be revived. They're natural to us, but now we've forgotten our real nature. So again, we revive that nature by hearing about Krishna, by speaking about Krishna, by remembering Krishna, by chanting Hare Krishna. And that way, the individual self revives his relationship with Krishna, and by acting in that relationship with Krishna, then he's true to himself. Like the hand, of course this is one of those digital watches, but if it were one with a hand on it, the hand is true to the clock by acting in relationship to the whole clock. Or it's true to itself, it's really acting as a hand when it works as part of the clock. If the hand jumps off and falls on the ground, it says, well, I'm a hand. No, you're not. You're just a stupid piece of metal sitting on the floor. But when you're in the clock, then you're a hand. Then you're true to your real purpose. So we're true to our real purpose when we're acting in relationship to Krishna. And that's as simple as chanting Hare Krishna, hearing about Krishna, reading about Krishna. And there's so many ways to act in Krishna consciousness. And that's how we stay spiritually grounded also. It's this simple, practical method. Wherever you go, anytime, any place, you can chant this Maha Mantra and be spiritually grounded. As soon as you start to float off the ground, we'll get lost. Chant Hare Krishna. We'll see how effective, how practical. Yeah?
You've been practicing for 40 years.
Uh-huh.
Does it all make sense to you?
Does it all make sense to me? Yeah, it does.
didn't take 40 years for it to make sense. It started making sense so after about a week.
I don't have any follow-up questions.
Okay. Someone else does?
Same students haven't heard the name Krishna.
What's that?
Some of the students haven't heard, and I don't think they've heard the name Krishna.
You haven't heard the name Krishna before?
Some of the students.
Who has? Okay. And who's new to the name Krishna? Okay, good. Krishna means, Krishna is the name of God, and it means all attractive. If you think about, God has lots of different names, right? I mean, so many languages, so many names. But this is a name in Sanskrit, and it means all attractive. Now, what makes somebody attractive? Good looks, Someone's good looking or attractive, beauty, wealth. Yeah, somebody's got a lot of money in his pocket, he's attractive. Fame, you know, if some famous person walking outside the window, we'd all be sticking our heads out to see who it is. Beauty, fame, wealth, knowledge. If somebody's very wise, very learned, they're attracted. What can I learn from this person? Strength. Somebody's really powerful. He's attractive. Detachment. Somebody can give everything up. That's attractive. Yeah, he can just turn his back on anything. You offer him a bribe, he says, take a walk. That'll be $1,000,000. Wow. So these are attractive features that a person would then. People have this. Somebody has some beauty, somebody has some knowledge, somebody has fame. But then someone's more beautiful than that person, someone's more famous than the famous person, someone's more strong, someone has more money. Then someone else has more than that person, someone else. And you get to the person who has the most of all of those things. He's all attractive. The person who has the most beauty can attract any other beautiful person. The person who has the most knowledge can attract any other wise person. The person who has the most strength can attract any other strong person. So when you get to the person who has the most of everything, he's God. So he's all attractive. And therefore this name, Krishna, is a universal name for the Supreme, universal name for God. Okay? Yeah?
So would you say that Krishna created the earth?
That Krishna created God?
The earth and people.
Yeah.
So you believe in evolution, science, or...?
Evolution.
Do you believe in that?
Well, it's not a question of religion. It's a question because, you know, religion can change, and Krishna becomes a Buddhist, the Buddhist becomes a Hindu, the Hindu becomes something else. But there's a question of knowledge, like gold. We don't talk about Christian gold or Hindu gold or Muslim gold, or gold is gold, wherever you find it. So it's a question of knowledge. Materialistic theory is everything comes from matter. Everything comes from matter. Matter sort of bubbles up, and you know, it bubbles and bubbles, and everything comes up out of the bubbles. It develops, itself develops into all the varieties that we see. Then the spiritual understanding is it doesn't work that way. That you don't get this sort of complexity that we see in the world, the aesthetic, the beauty that we see in the world, simply by matter put in. Apart from that, where does matter get so smart that it does all this stuff? Just like we have this room. And if I told you, you know, it's a great room we're sitting in here, and it's just fantastic the way the glass and the bricks and the steel just
came together. It's just amazing. I don't know where they got the desire and the intelligence to do that, but it's just another wonder of nature. You'd think I was Looney Tunes. You'd say I'm man. Because matter doesn't do that. Matter works under the direction of consciousness. Like your car. Your car sits there and doesn't go anywhere, doesn't do anything. GPS doesn't even talk to you. It just sits there until you give it some direction. You turn a key, you turn the wheel, you press the button and say, I want to hear from the GPS. Because you're consciousness. And you want to go right, or you want to go left, or you want to go straight, or you want to go fast, you want to go slow. No matter, the machine works under the direction of the person. And that's how it is with everything. This body is a machine. And there's consciousness. As long as the conscious person is there within the machine goes. As soon as the person leaves the machine, dead machine. It won't do anything. So consciousness works, or rather matter works, under the direction of consciousness. That makes sense, and that's our everyday experience. And then you get this idea that matter is... does things on its own. It doesn't. Nor have they been able to demonstrate that. If you ask the scientist, yes, life comes from matter, and could you show me how that happens? Could you, I've got a couple hours, could you create some life for me in the laboratory? I've brought, you know, let me know what you need, nitrogen, hydrogen, carbon, and I'll bring it all, and you could maybe make me a little protozoa or something. Can't do anything.
My question is more on the lines of, do you believe in the fact that Adam and Eve were created by Krishna?
Oh, that Adam and Eve were created by Krishna.
Yeah, do you believe in that initially?
Well, of course, that's the biblical account.
Yeah.
That Adam and Eve are created by God. And in the Vedic literature, also it said that the original man and the original woman are created by God. Same. That makes a lot more sense, that there's an intelligent, supreme person who creates things. Not that things just, that the stupidest thing in the world, matter, which is so stupid that it can't do anything on its own, becomes so smart that it becomes, you know, everything. That's not science, that's spooky. What else today? Okay. The clipboard have another question for you now? Ooh, it got bigger. How do I make sure that I ignore people who want to stop me on my way forward? Well, you don't have to ignore them. Just smile and keep going. Make things you by having a sense of what's important. You know, if I need to get to my classroom because I have an important exam, doesn't matter who meets me on the way, gotta go. If I'm not doing anything, if I have no, I'm just hanging around, then, hey, let's go here, let's go there. Yeah, sure, why not? So if we have a clear sense of purpose, then we won't be held back. We have a clear sense of purpose. Generally, yeah. So that we can get a clear sense of who we are, what our purpose is in life. From the Bhagavad Gita and other books, we can get an understanding, and from, again, from practical experience. How do I make peace with who I am? You don't have to make peace with who you are. You are who you are. We make peace with who we are. Let me think about that. How do I make peace with who I am? I'm trying to think exactly what that means. How do I make peace with who I am? Maybe whose question is that? Would you like to help me out? By understanding that we're not this body. Sometimes I'm trying to make peace with who I am, and I'm thinking, well, here I am, a fat little Irish guy. And how do I, you know, how do I learn to live with that and accept it and come to peace with myself? It's all artificial, because I'm not a fat little Irish guy. Or a tall, skinny African guy, or this or that. I have to somehow or other learn to accept it. That's illusion. I'm not that. I'm not this body. I'm not this body at all. To find peace and happiness on the bodily platform, not possible. Not going to happen. Out of the question. But when I understand who I actually am, that self is actually peaceful by nature. That self is actually the source of happiness and satisfaction. When I come to that platform, when I come to my real self, I'll naturally be happy. Or when I can realize my connection with the Supreme Self, when I realize my connection, I'll be happy. I won't have to, you know, all right, however, it'll be just natural. You know, how does the bird come to peace with the sky? You know, it doesn't have a problem. As soon as we come to the spiritual platform, peace will be there, harmony will be there. And as soon as we're on the material platform, on the platform of the body, impossible. So we'll never be peaceful, we'll never be have harmony, but we'll never be satisfied. Okay, here's a question. I once heard or read that once someone turns to Krishna, their faults or their bad side is exposed to them, perhaps in a way to strip them of their ego and to help cleanse them. But I've been shown in numerous ways how unqualified I am to become a devotee of Krishna. And do I know? Okay, yes. We have a tension between it's being loud and it's being hot, so that's okay. How do I know that I'm worthy? We're going to suffer one way or the other. Too cold, huh? Okay. The windows are all open as far as they can be. Okay. Good. It's natural to be a spiritual being. Oh, good percussion too. It's natural to be a spiritual being, and as spiritual beings, it's natural to have a connection with God or Krishna. And it's not that it has to be a, you know what a lemon session is? A lemon session is kind of a session where we all, okay, now you're in. And everybody else starts telling you all about, you know, you do this and you do this and admit it, you do that. And we see that, you know, start finding all your faults. And then the next time it's your turn to be it, and I'll tell you all about it, you know, and That way we become real men and we become purified and we're stripped to the core. And, you know. But that's not exactly how Krishna consciousness works. It doesn't have to be like a traumatic encounter session in which, you know, everything is like the skin is ripped off your body and you're hung out to dry. It's joyful. Susukam kartam lakeya. Everybody's worthy to be a devotee of Krishna. Everybody. Because we're all spiritual living beings. Just like anyone born in this country is worthy to be a citizen. It's not like you have to do something to earn your citizenship. You're born here, you're a citizen. Good enough. That we're spiritual living beings means automatically that we have our relationship with Krishna. Doesn't have to be. Nothing else required. There's nothing has to be pushed on you. Nothing that you have to. It has to be uncovered. Yes. How do we use our talents to link us to God? Is there a certain way that is referred to as misusing our talents?
Yeah.
There are things that will bring us closer to God and things that will bring us further away from God. For example, drugs and intoxicants. That will bring us further away from any kind of reality. There's a joke that came to mind. Someone said that religion and alcohol don't mix. And the answer was, no, three drinks, and I think that I'm St. Francis of Assisi. But the point is that by drinking, by in drugs and this and that, I get out of touch even with material reality. You know, I think I can walk through the window and nothing will happen, or just become dull, and, you know, people are walking all over me and I'm sleeping through it. I'm really going to start to lose touch. The more intoxicated I become, the more crazy I become, the more dull I become, or the more gaga I become. So then how am I going to make advancement in spiritual consciousness at the same time that I'm even warping my material consciousness? It doesn't work. It leaves me away from reality, not closer to reality. In the 1960s, Amitabha grew up in the 1960s, young American people thought that they were going to get closer to God by LSD. Didn't happen, because it's not that by ingesting some material thing you come to the spiritual platform. Rather, people just got into hallucinations and got into really larger illusions than the ones that they were already in. So intoxicants, for example, lead us away from God. Four things, actually. Intoxicants, gambling. The more I gamble, the more I become focused on winning. I could win. I could get the jackpot. And then how am I going to think about God? Thinking about God means you have a mind that's peaceful, a mind that's clear. If I'm going to win, I can win. I can't develop that clarity of mind. Rather, I become obsessed with material illusion. The illusion is I'm going to win, I'm going to win. One out of 100 million people win. And every poor slob is thinking, yeah, I have a chance. Intoxication makes one, a little mad, or a lot mad, and gambling also. One forgets the purpose of life. Now the purpose of life is not to realize my spiritual identity, to get out of material confusion. The purpose of life is to win. One becomes bewildered. Intoxication, gambling, animal killing. If we're all children of God, how am I going to make spiritual advancement by needlessly killing God's creatures? It leads me away from spiritual advancement. by giving up animal killing, one will feel self-purification. Something you can do, those who are serious about spiritual realization. It's a simple thing to do. There's so many fruits, grains, vegetables, milk products, especially South African, my goodness, there's so many fruits. Just on fruits, you could live for 100 years. And then milk and grains, so many vegetables. You could live for so happily, and cheaper too. And non-violently, without causing pain and suffering to innocent creatures. And you'll do that, you'll see how you're spiritually making progress. Or the devotees, they offer their food to Krishna, make still more spiritual progress. The technique of bhakti yoga. Oh, gambling, intoxication, eating, illicit sex, just, you know, willy-nilly kind of, okay, why not, kind of sex. No one gets closer to God by that. No one gets closer to God that way. They just get more into the bodily. I am this body, and that idea, that illusion, becomes like locked when we're having sex this way. It becomes like, yes, I am this body. That's called Maya, the illusion. So those, doesn't matter if you're Christian, Hindu, Muslim, anything. Any spiritual tradition will tell you that if you want to make spiritual advancement, then sex should be controlled. It shouldn't be just... Therefore marriage is there in every religious tradition. Because it's helpful for spiritual advancement. So there are things that can lead us away from spiritual progress. There are things that can lead us towards spiritual progress. This mantra meditation will help us advance spiritually. I mentioned that you can offer food to Krishna or eat the food that's offered to Krishna. Amazing thing, but it helps us advance spiritually. Reading spiritual books like Bhagavad Gita. Attending meetings like this one, where instead of talking about the world of God, we're talking about spiritual progress. And that's another way. There's so many ways. There are things that are favorable for spiritual advancement, things that are unfavorable. So by accepting the things that are favorable and leaving aside the things that are unfavorable, we move ahead. Simple thing, huh? Just one thing at a time. Will it help me? Will it hold me back? Hold me back? Forget it. Moves me forward? I'll do it. We don't know if it's going to hold me back or move me forward. Well, therefore, we have these books like Bhagavad Gita that help us get some insight into that. Is that okay for my question?
Sorry.
Yeah.
I asked that question.
That's your question. Okay.
I was wondering, for example, I'm someone who loves to sing.
You love to sing.
And I sing for God.
Great.
Is it then a sin if I start to sing about things like alcohol, things like, you know, like immorality? Is that referred to as a sin because I'm using my talent?
Yeah, it's misusing your talent. You can sing, and when you sing for God, you feel your connection with God. Other people will start thinking about God. So then you're using your life spiritually. You're using your talents spiritually.
So what about someone who has a passion for something like rapping, but what they rap about? Does it matter that they have a passion for it?
Yeah, the passion means passion for getting entangled in the illusion. It's not that you become passionate about something. It's good. I'm not passionate about killing my neighbors. You know, that doesn't mean... because I'm sincere about it or I'm into it, I'm going to make progress. We have to look at it and say, well, what is it that I'm passionate about? Is it going to help me go up or is it going to move me down? Okay. Yeah, there's a big difference between singing about God and singing about Jack Daniels. Yeah.
what she was talking about. I'm an artist and I paint. And what I find is there's a lot of arguments that come about whenever people analyze art.
Art.
For instance, whenever you're an artist and you're the one that's portraying something, at times you have the intent of positive kind of ideas. Maybe you have a person that's nude and they posing in a certain way.
To you.
Maybe you have a person that's nude and they pose in a certain way, but your idea is about the body and it has nothing to do with porn or anything like that.
With nothing to do with
porn.
Pornography. Oh, porn. Okay.
Pornography kind of thing. Your intention isn't in that line, but then because people read in certain ways, they read that element because it's just a nude person. So would that be considered as a sin that you're unintentionally attracting that kind of view from other people?
Okay.
When you're not intentionally doing it, would it be?
Okay.
Let me see if I understand it. Like we're doing something, say, with art that without our intention gets people like on the bodily platform, or gets them lusty, or gets them. Was that sinful on our part? Well, let's look at it in terms of, rather than just in terms of sin or not sin, let's look at it in terms of knowledge. When we act in knowledge, that's when we're acting best. When I know what I'm doing and I know that it's good. Like, say I'm a doctor. I know where to cut, I know that it's going to do the job. So I'm acting in knowledge. I know what's going to benefit the patient. Now if I don't know, then, you know, maybe I kind of know and I do my best. But that's all right. Or else I really don't know what I'm doing. So the more I have knowledge, you know, maybe even without quite knowing, maybe I'll help the patient. But if I really know, then I'll do something beneficial. If I'm in ignorance or just kind of not sure, then what I do may not be so good for others and it may not be so good for me. You see? So the artist, when the artist acts with real knowledge, what can I paint or what can I sing that will, what can I sculpt that will really give people spiritual understanding, that will really elevate people, that will really benefit people. When the artist acts with that understanding, then their art is really fulfilled. And when they don't know, they're kind of expressing their feelings and they want to do something creative, they want to do something good, but they don't quite know, then it's not going to be as good for them, as helpful for them, as satisfying for them. And others may get bewildered, just perplexed, not understand, or just misunderstand. So, for example, if you look in our books, you'll see paintings that are done by artists who have spiritual vision. They're guided by self-realized souls. And they're painting in such a way that people become elevated by, they get spiritual understanding by seeing these paintings. Does that answer your question? I'm not quite sure.
Not exactly. Yeah. What I'm thinking is, you are expressing yourself, yes, and certain people understand you and understand your intention, and it is good.
Mm-hmm.
But then those individuals that don't and mistake whatever you're trying to express, wouldn't you say that's on their part, that's their ignorance?
Yeah, well, of course, now we get deep into art. You know, we try to express something, and, well, if we're good at expressing it, people should get our ideas. Sometimes we're not so good at it, and so nobody really figures out what we're talking about. That can also be there. But yeah, sometimes the person who has clear knowledge, the best intentions, does the best possible thing and people misunderstand. That, you know, then what can you do? It's not your fault. Yeah. This spiritual teachers are sometimes totally misunderstood. Jesus Christ, he came to teach something beneficial for everyone. He was misunderstood. And that may happen. Because it's a world of ignorance. And misunderstanding is the norm rather than the exception. Something else? Oh, I have another question here. Can I make comments on other religions? Islam, Christianity, and so on. Well, it's not a question. I mentioned that before about gold. It's not really a question of my religion and your religion and this religion and that religion. Religions can change. Religions, in one sense, you can say they're not the essential thing. That suppose you're Christian and I'm Muslim. But the core that you're a spiritual living being, I'm a spiritual living being, you have a relationship with God, I have a relationship with God. That's the essential thing. That I bow to Mecca and you bow to Jerusalem is not really. That's the superficial thing. And that can change. You know, the guy who's bowing to Mecca today bows toward Jerusalem tomorrow. But the eternal religion of the living being is not Hindu or Muslim or Christian or is that he's a servant of God. That we want to revive. That's the real religion of the living being, not my religion, your religion, and we're going to fight about which religion is better. That's not the thing.
Sir, I've got a quick question.
Sure.
Would you classify Christian consciousness as an organized religion? Is it organized?
No, it's disorganized.
Don't you have a religious book?
Yeah, it's not a question of organized religion. It's a question of knowledge. Again, like gold. Now, there may be a gold-selling organization. Or there may be a lot of different gold-selling organizations. But gold is gold. So there may be a society or a group that's teaching the knowledge given in Bhagavad Gita, for example. But that doesn't make it a religion, again. Because the teaching is not about join my religion, give up this religion, join that religion. It's about understanding the inner self, about understanding our relationship with God. That's for everyone of every religion. It's not that Bhagavad Gita is meant for the Hindus. And if you're Christian, well, you have to become a Hindu, then you can... No. Like gold. You don't have to become... If gold has been found in India, you don't have to become Indian to wear it. It's for everybody. So spiritual knowledge is for everyone. It's not limited by these little boxes of my religion, your religion, organized or disorganized. Okay?
Yeah.
Quick answer?
I want to listen. I don't want to try to engage with you so that I will take up all the time if I do that. But I just want to hear your honest comments.
Okay,
thank you. I'll meditate and reflect on it later.
Okay.
I don't always get it.
Get it right on the spot. Okay, well, thank you. They're all good questions so far. You're the winning speak.
I'm trying to be nice.
Doing good. Yeah.
To the issue of religion, I just wanted to be clear to everybody, whether maybe I'm the wrong or right, whereby maybe.
Here, I'm going to give you this microphone.
Okay. To the issue of religion, I just want to be clear that I'll be wrong if I do follow God and I do believe that the Christian is alive, you know? And at the same time experiencing about my cultures, you know? That each and everything that I come from my culture, I do follow, and then at the same time just to make sure that the way of Christianity I do follow. I'll be wrong by doing something that they do. Maybe I should take all the one position on that issue.
Well, that microphone's not the best, but
You're, if I get it right, you're sticking with the Christian tradition.
Like, it me like it's coming out with some of the examples.
So do me a favor, because that microphone is too much on the bass. You slow down a little bit for me, and just give it to me a little slower, because one problem is I'm from America, and it takes me a little while to get, you know, my accents straight. So just help me out a little slower, and I'll try hard.
How is it now?
That's good.
Okay, thank you. My question is, I will be wrong whereby I stick to my cultures, you know, as the Africans, and then at the same time, to understand or to follow the Christianity, or maybe to take only one, and to choose that, no, I'm sticking to the culture, or maybe to go for God.
Let me see if I
can take this simultaneous.
Your question is about mixing two cultures, or
is
that like the wrong thing to do? Should you stick with one culture and not mix and match?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think we need to like undermine culture. If you're, every culture has its virtues. We were talking a little bit yesterday. Were we talking? No, someone was talking with Ignatius a little bit about African culture and some of the values in African culture that, you know, we can appreciate. These are really nice values. So it's not that we have to say, well, sorry, ditch those values because we've come from Europe or we've come from India and, you know, this is the way we do it. And, you know, forget African culture. We've got the better one. Or forget even this religion or that religion. Forget everything you've learned in the Christian religion. We've got a new religion for you. It's not that culture needs to be abandoned. It's practically almost impossible to just throw away our culture. Even artificially, if we try it, we kind of look stupid. You know, you see people who are trying to pretend that they belong to a different culture and they can't quite do it. And they wind up looking... Like I go to Japan and all these little Japanese kids in blue jeans and caps turned backwards trying to look American. And we come from New York, you know, and it's like, give me a break. And, you know, you could do a good job of being Japanese, but you're really a lousy New Yorker. There's especially the best aspects of every culture we should keep. There may be some things in almost any culture that we'd like to leave behind. You know, we look at that and say, gee, it's in my culture, but I don't want anything to do with that. There's certain things in any culture that really don't belong there. Where we, even if we didn't look at any other culture, we'd say, well, our culture needs to be refined here. We have to take the best things from it and leave the worst things behind. So, no, you don't have to be Krishna conscious, you don't have to throw out or abandon or forget about your culture. Just add this chanting of Hare Krishna, add this spiritual knowledge, add this meditation. And then you'll know your culture becomes more refined. Your own clarity of vision becomes refined, so you can appreciate more what's valuable in your culture. And you can see things that you say, you know, that doesn't even belong there. Okay? Okay. Thank you. Good question. How are we doing?
If there's more questions,
well, good.
I can't speak up.
You're left, okay.
My question is, do you find that there are any commonalities between the message of Jesus and that of Krishna?
Sure.
Or are there any differences, and if so, what?
Yeah, the essential, like Jesus says, love my Father. His essential message is to love God. And Krishna is speaking as God and saying, love me.
So if your father says, love me, and the son says, love my father, then we're talking about the same message. Jesus says that don't heap up your treasures in this material world. Look toward the spiritual world for your life. So practically speaking, the message is the same essential message. Same essential message. It's given practical shape in the form of this chanting, which helps us. You'll be a better Christian, or you'll be a better Muslim, better Jew, better Jain, by this process of mantra meditation. Or by reading Bhagavad Gita, one can become a better Christian, a better Hindu. Because the message is not antithetical, the same message. Same thing we were saying before, that it's not my religion, your religion, this religion, that religion. The essence of religion is the same. There's no genuine religion that says, get deeper into this material world. Realize that you're this body and this one life is everything, and then when you're dead, you're dead. And do whatever feels good, just do that. There's no such. Every genuine spiritual process will say, you know, control what you do in the material world, look toward your eternal nature, your eternal life, look toward your relationship with God. This is the same.
Last question. I had spoken to somebody quite a while back, and they said that God's biggest problem right now is probably religion. What would you take beyond that?
God's biggest problem is religion. God's biggest problem is whoever said that.
where he came from. Because it seems to divide us more than it has unified.
You know, there's a lot of this. All the division in the world is because of religion. And, you know, all the wars in the world are fought over religion. And what's dividing people in the world is religion. And that's, you know, a lot of bunk. It's just not true. It's a catchphrase. It's, you know, everybody's fighting about religion. Okay, let's take a look at it. Vietnam War was all about religion, right? Korean War? Religion? World War II? World War I? Civil War, the war in Liberia, the war in Rwanda, it's all about religion. The war in Iraq, that has nothing to do with religion either, you know. You could be any religion you want, as long as you don't have oil there, we're going to leave you alone. If you look at what people are fighting over, it's not about religion. It's about greed. It's about, this is mine, no, it's mine. This is mine, no, it's mine. When it all belongs to God. It's about this body. You're this and I'm a that. Not about, tribal, where was that? And, so many tribal clashes. As soon as you're that tribe, or you're that tribe, on the basis of the body, and we're going to kill you, whoever you are. What's that have to do with religion? By understanding that we're spiritual beings, by understanding that we're of one spiritual nature, by understanding that every one of us has a relationship with God, we transcend those problems. It's not that religion is creating the problem. When religion descends to the material platform, when the religion simply is about another way to make money, another way to exploit people, then sure, but then it's not religion anymore. Therefore, we have to get to the essence of religion, which is to develop our relationship with God. How's that?
Yeah, I just bet you.
Thank you. And
I'm just repeating.
So if anyone has other questions, they could speak to Maharaj directly, or we'll take supper downstairs.
Okay. Thank you all very much. Very good questions. And thank you for your patience without the air conditioner. Hare Krishna.
Just an announcement. Shri Swami Maharaj will be coming to our campus on Thursday.